This is your tech news briefing for Thursday, March 19th. I'm Kateri Yoakum from The Wall Street Journal, working from home. We reported on how countries in Asia were using surveillance technology to keep tabs on coronavirus patients and keep them from spreading the virus. Now, tech companies and the government are taking their own steps here in the U.S. to use tech to control the spread of the virus, but they are getting some pushback from privacy advocates. Our reporter Bob McMillan will join us to explain after these headlines. What a time to debut a new product. Apple brought out a new keyboard on Wednesday for its upgraded MacBook Air, a return to the traditional scissor mechanism. It's a sign that the company is abandoning the butterfly keyboard it introduced in 2015, which required extended repair programs. Company also unveiled a new iPad Pro on Wednesday, and a new iPhone model is expected later this spring. But as we know, it's not a good time to be releasing new products. Earlier this week, Apple announced that its physical stores would remain closed until further notice because of the coronavirus. And it's not clear what demand will look like in the days and months to come. Right now, though, there is a lot of demand for laptops. The other day, we spoke about Google's challenges to try to get laptops for more than 1,000 employees who are now working from home. Well, big surprise, they're not the only ones. Across the U.S., the demand for laptops has skyrocketed. Unfortunately for computer makers, the surge comes after they've been struggling with disruptions in their supply chains because of the outbreak in China, which is home to many manufacturing centers. And speaking of working from home, we are, as are many of you, and all week we've been asking you to call in and give us your best tips, questions, and suggestions for how to make the best of it. Here with her daily tip is our senior personal tech columnist, Joanna Stern. Joanna, welcome back.
Good to be here again. In the same chair.
All right. So what's today's tip?
So my tip of the day is actually a couple of tips, but they're all related to Slack, which has completely taken over my life. And probably in the matter of every 5 minutes, I'm like averaging, 500 notifications and people trying to get my attention. So these tips are about taking back control of your life from Slack. And the first one is to set those notifications in a smart way. And the one thing I really do like about Slack, I like a lot of things about Slack, but one of the things I like the best about Slack is you can set notifications specifically for each channel or chat. And the way you can do that is, we'll walk through this together on a desktop, on the desktop app. You can do this on the phone too, but in the desktop app, you go to the chat you're in, you select the little gear icon in the upper right corner. It says conversation settings. Then you're gonna click down to notification preferences, and then you can customize how you wanna be notified about activity in that channel.
And you can also do this for overall settings too, right?
Yeah. You can go in and just say, you know what? I never want to hear notifications from this app. Chances are that's probably not the best idea right now if this is what you're relying on for communications with most of your vital employees or your boss. But you can do that if you'd like. And you can also, one other nice thing is you can actually snooze them for periods of time. I want to mention my top Slack tip, which is actually to star the most important conversations or chats that you have. This is a game changer because if your sidebar looks anything like mine, there are like hundreds of contacts and people you've messaged with before. If you hit the little star icon in the top of a chat or channel, it will put those to the top of the list and it will make it so much easier to find those.
Awesome. That sounds great. I'm going to definitely use those because I have been having trouble. You know what I'm having trouble with? Keeping track of all the different GChat, Slack, Google Hangouts, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of different stuff going on there.
Yeah, that tip is just tell everyone to consolidate to one thing.
That's probably a good tip. So for the past few days, we've had this voicemail box open and we've been getting calls from our listeners and from readers. We got a call from this guy, Robert, from Connecticut. Tell me about him.
Yeah, so his company went 100% remote, and they've come up with lots of ways to stay engaged.
To keep the office vibe going while working remotely, our team has been playing virtual DJ by contributing to our shared office playlist on Spotify. It not only puts a smile on your face, but it keeps people guessing who added which song to the playlist.
His Spotify playlist was pretty great, I must say. He shared it with us, so that was awesome.
Yeah, I'm not really sure I'd want to share my Spotify playlist publicly right now. I just say two words, Bonnie Raitt. I just put that out there.
Fair enough.
And that's not all. Robert's team is still coming up with new ways to hang out without spreading germs.
Also to keep the face-to-face interaction going after hours, even though we can't share a drink together at the local bar after 5, we're hosting virtual happy hours on Google Meets to keep those personal connections alive and well. We've seen some teams propose after-hours Netflix watch parties on Facebook Live, and we've seen others sign up for head-to-head competitions on a variety of gaming networks after hours.
I'm not sure that we're going to start any gaming networks at the Wall Street Journal, but if other listeners want to share their stories, how can they reach our work from home hotline?
You can email them to me at joanna.stern@wsj.com or leave a message on our new work from home tech hotline. The number is 314-635-0388.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, our reporter Bob McMillan will take a look at how the government is using surveillance technology to track the coronavirus. We've spoken on this podcast before about some of the technology that countries in Asia have used to control the spread of the coronavirus. Disinfecting drones, people detecting drones, fever detecting goggles, and even QR codes that tell authorities whether you're sick and where you are. Now, as the virus spreads across the U.S., government agencies here are also enacting or considering enacting similar measures that would draw on a range of tracking and surveillance technologies that are already out there. And the measures could test the limits of our personal privacy. Our reporter, Bob McMillan, is here to break it all down for us. Bob, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey there. Pleasure to be here.
So, Bob, we saw the Chinese governments and other governments in Asia using surveillance technology to track the coronavirus and to track people who potentially were sick with the coronavirus. What's happening here in the U.S. right now?
Right now, there are some smaller companies that have stepped forward to offer services to help track this spread of the virus that are sort of envisioning themselves as partners with the CDC to give insights into who has the disease, how it's spreading. The best known of the smaller companies doing this is a company called Palantir, which has contract with the CDC and has kind of helped them model the spread of disease in the past. But there are other more startup sized companies that are coming forward. I think the big question here is there are a couple of companies that have sort of the mother loads of data that would be helpful in these cases, but also simultaneously raises privacy questions. So these would be the telco companies, Facebook and Google. And we don't know exactly how far the government is asking these companies to go and how far they are going in providing information about the spread of disease. As you said, in China, the telco companies were helpful when the government was trying to sort of model out who was exposed to the disease and how it had been spreading. You know, that the location data that these companies have is very valuable for that. You can sort of see where people have been, and you can do things like get a sense of who might need to be quarantined or get a sense of how the disease is spreading from that. So that's like the mother load, and that is kind of unknown what's happening there. Now, we do know that these smaller companies are offering, you know, similar services based on other data that they acquire. One big source of the data that's being proposed is data from mobile apps. So when you use a mobile app, you might give it access to your location. That information is often sold to aggregators who sort of collect location data, often in an anonymized form, but that data then could be used by the CDC to sort of model how people are moving and how many people are moving. One app I've heard that's being developed is something that would allow government agencies to see how crowded individual locations might be. So was the Trader Joe's in my neighborhood filled with people on Tuesday at noon, or are these self-distancing distancing measures we're telling everyone to engage in, are they working?
I think it sounds like there are a couple of different ways we saw that you're talking about there. One is anonymized data, basically just to be able to track the spread of the virus. We also saw, you mentioned Facebook. We know that on Sunday, there was a task force at the White House with some of these big tech companies. What do we see as the possibility right now with in-laws for them to collaborate with the government in a similar way to the way that social media was kind of used to track people in China?
Well, right now, I mean, the U.S. law prevents Facebook from sharing private data. Like if you made a post saying, hey, I've just contracted coronavirus, you know, they would not be able to share that in a widespread way with the government. The question is whether there are a sort of emergency powers being invoked and what the implications of that will be. And I think the most likely place for those, you know, emergency powers to be invoked is with respect to location data, because there's sort of a precedent for that happening in criminal investigations where they have an emergency situation and they need location data. So the legal people we've spoken with say that would not be sort of an unreasonable ask of the government to go to, you know, the telcos, for example, and say we need a bunch of location data to help track the spread of this virus.
But even the location data could be very different, right? You could be, in the case that you were talking about, like a criminal investigation is usually about finding an individual. We could also imagine kind of a surveillance that was much more broad. For example, like you were talking about, to figure out how many people were in a certain area at a certain time and whether or not there's going to be a new outbreak in that area as a result of kind of a person coming in. So it feels like those are two very different types of surveillance.
Yeah, the latter one is very widespread, you know, and that I think that's what has people concerned, that in a time of crisis, we may witness a sort of a handover of a widespread surveillance capability that we've not seen before in the United States. So, you know, that's like the million-dollar question here. We do know that, like I said, like as our story reports, there are a lot of smaller companies that are trying to use surveillance-type technology, trying to access public data to share, you know, information about how the disease might be spreading.
And you mentioned, you know, there are some concerns. You've spoken to privacy advocates. What are they saying about this?
Well, they're saying that they want more transparency. They want to know what's going on. The CDC has not been transparent in telling us, you know, exactly what's happening with this. We know that, for example, Health and Human Services has contracts with data aggregators, and we're not sure what that, you know, we reached out to them and tried to get them to talk about what they were doing with this, and we didn't get an answer on that. So there's right now, to be fair, these agencies are dealing with a big public health crisis, but there is this, there's this sense that there are a lot of people with data about us that are coming forward to the government and saying, hey, we can help you track this pandemic, and you know, the public just doesn't know what's happening.
This week, the government came out saying that they're going to expand their telehealth services for Medicare and Medicaid patients and allow people to be talking to their doctors on FaceTime and Skype about their conditions. Is anybody talking about the use of that data? I mean, those are obviously protected conversations by HIPAA law, but it does kind of occur to me that they're now, those private conversations that are usually one-on-one in a room without a camera are now taking place online with a camera and could be a source of aggregating data as well.
No, I haven't heard about that. I could tell you about one case that people are concerned about, and it's this, and this is something we've seen in the past. People will go on social media. You can imagine Twitter is a very public platform, and people will make statements on social media, and they'll provide information during a time of crisis that they may not actually want to be in the public forever in these public data sets that these aggregators are grabbing. So, you know, you might put out some medical information. You might say something about your medical condition, or you might say that you have the virus, or you might put out your phone number or even your address if you need help getting food delivered or something like that. And then a year later, you may want to take that back. And the problem is that if this data is being collected and is being aggregated by third parties, it's virtually impossible to do that. So one of the concerns that people have is that there may be data that's being put out right now in a time of crisis that the people who are putting it out actually wouldn't want it to live in perpetuity in a database somewhere that they don't even know about.
Good point. That's a very good point. As people are oversharing and maybe oversharing information online, something to think about for sure. All right, Bob McMillan, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Before we go, don't forget to share your work from home tech tips and headaches with us. Our senior personal tech columnist, Joanna Stern, will be sharing her favorite tips and finding solutions for some of your questions right here with us every day. You can leave us a voice message at the number in the description, or you can email joanna.stern@wsj.com with your questions. And that was your tech news briefing. I'm Kateri Yoakum from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.